Welcome back to the Electric Drum. Now, on Thursday, I interviewed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and I thought that this interview needed to be also ran again. So I'm going to play this interview again. This is one of my greatest interviews that I've ever done. This guy was my hero. I just love the fact that I got a chance to interview this brother. So here we go, and we will see you next week. 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Juan Castillo, and you know I've been talking about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar coming to the Southern Lineman Center for a lecture on Friday, May 5th at 7 p.m. Right now, on the line, NBA Hall of Famer, author, social activist, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. How you doing, my brother?
I'm doing very well, Juan. How's everything?
Everything is really, really good, man. We're very excited about you coming down here. But I want my first question. You recently received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Barack Obama. What was it like to receive that special honor, my brother?
Well, it was great because it was about things that had nothing to do with sports. You know, it was about all the things that I care about, especially the social issues that have become so crucial at this point. You know, the way that our country is going now, with everybody suspicious and all the fear and just animosity that's, you know, being perpetrated between all the factions, it's disturbing, and I'm hoping that we can do better than that.
Yeah, no question. Now, you know, in 2008, you were diagnosed with early stage, CML, which is chronic myeloid leukemia, making your struggle public, and it, you know, leading to a high profile awareness campaign. Tell us about that campaign and what research is being done in this area.
Well, you know, the great thing is that CML is now something that can be treated.
Wonderful.
So a whole lot of people who thought that they might have been facing a death sentence now have the hope to live a normal and productive life.
Wow.
So I just got behind the people that provide this and try to explain to people, you know, what it's all about. The Novartis Pharmaceutical Company wants people to be well, and they do the best they can to help people in that direction.
So how you doing, my brother? You doing well now?
I'm doing very well. You know, it's really a funny thing. Just finding out the genetic component of the disease enabled the researchers to find a way to treat it.
Yes, exactly. Now, some people don't know that you have written quite a few books. I've read all of them. I got to tell you that. Now, my favorite of all, you tell the story of the 761st Tank Battalion, right? And
yeah.
Their combat record in Europe was, like, very noteworthy. They earned their Presidential Unit Citation for Distinguished Service and more than 250 Purple Hearts. Now, tell us a little bit about the book and why you decided to write it.
Well, I wanted to write that book because one of the guys that was in that unit was a police officer with my father. And I had known him since I was a kid. He was like a surrogate uncle to me. You know, I'd see him, especially when I travel in the subways, you know, because that's where he patrolled. And I had no idea of who he was. He was just another adult. And then about 2 or 3 years after I retired, I saw that they were doing a documentary on the 761st Tank Battalion, and I went to see the screening of the documentary, and my dad's friend, Leonard Smith, was there, and I was surprised to see him. I said, "What are you doing here?"
Wow.
And he said, "Hey, I was in the unit." And then I go and find out, I watched the documentary, I find out that he had fought in the Battle of the Bulge, and he had also been involved in the liberation of some of the Nazi death camps. And it just totally blew my mind that somebody I knew was involved in all of those things.
You know, and
so I figured I'd try and write their story and tell the world about it because most people don't know about them.
You did a great job too, man. And the way that you talked about, you know, almost every one of those, officers and enlisted men who actually were in the 761st Tank Battalion, and it was designated as colored back in those days. And, you know, one of the things that I found very fascinating was how, you know, they trained for a long time, you know, in World War II, and they weren't allowed to fight until Patton decided to bring them on. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, what happened was toward the windup of World War II, there was a manpower shortage of combat troops. And an order was issued that any black soldiers who had combat training could join and other combat units that had white soldiers in it. And Patton also wanted to have some additional tankers. So he brought the 761st Tank Battalion over in, as a whole unit, and incorporated them into his forces. And they were the first ones to enter Germany.
And they kicked some butt, too, man.
they were extraordinary. And they went from one really tough campaign to the other. They started out in the Saar, and they went from there to the Ruhr, then from there to the Battle of the Bulge, and then on into Germany, and finally met the Russian soldiers at Steyr, Austria. And
yes.
At that point, their war was over.
And it's interesting because a lot of folks don't understand that, you know, an infantry definitely needs tanks, you know. And the Germans at that time, you know, had a better tank than the Sherman tanks that we had. So it was even more difficult to fight, right?
Oh, it was very difficult. Our tank, our artillery on our tank could only penetrate the German armor at 400 yards. The German tanks, their artillery on their tanks could penetrate our armor at 1,200 yards, triple the distance. So they really had to know what they were doing and maneuver and use effective tactics to overcome the difference in the tanks, because the German tanks were a lot more substantial. You know, their armor was a lot more formidable than the armor on the Sherman tank.
So they were like point guards coming down the fast break plane against some bigger guys like you, right?
More or less. And they had to use their speed and agility and quickness to overcome the toughness of the Sherman tanks. I can explain it to you very easily. The American tanks were designed, I think, by people from our automotive industry. German tanks were designed by Ferdinand Porsche.
Wow. There you go. So now, you got a new book coming out in May, Coach Wooden and Me. Can you give me a highlight or two?
Well, I talk about some of the things that people don't know about Coach Wooden, what he went through to get to where he was. People don't know that Coach Wooden was active in the civil rights movement as a coach.
Mm.
They have no idea some of the things that he did while he was coaching in Indiana and then also at UCLA. So it's a fascinating look at that. And then our personal relationship.
Yes.
How we got to become really close friends and help each other through a lot of tough times in our lives. You know, he lost his wife, was very close to him. You know, he was able to console me as I was going through the loss of my parents. He was close to me. He went to visit my dad, unbeknownst to me, while my dad was in a nursing home for a couple of months. Just an incredible man. Very generous, a very loving man, and kept it all under wraps.
You know, it's interesting because, I mean, you know, so often as parents are thinking about sending their kids to go play basketball or any other sport, you know, in the collegiate ranks, you know, you want to make sure that your kid is going there to not only become, you know, a good basketball player and, you know, hopefully, you know, go to the NBA or, you know, go to the NFL. But the reason you're in college is for you to become a scholar athlete, really, right? And you know, and he supported that, right? Because that's what you did.
Yeah, he wanted us to graduate. He wanted us to become good citizens. He wanted us to be good parents and husbands. That was his focus. And a lot of coaches wouldn't do that. Our coaches, their whole existence is to win games and get that bigger salary.
Right.
He wasn't about that.
Right. So on a basketball note, right,
You know, what are the centers right now in the league that impress you today?
Well, you know, the centers are doing a different thing now. You got centers that have to know how to shoot the three-point shot because they're going to get those. I made one in my whole career.
I see you try to take those three-pointers, bro.
I was 1 for 13.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, it's the game has evolved. And to explain the difference, I just point out how important the three-point shot is to the game these days. On my best team, probably the 1985 Lakers, we shot from the first game of the season until the last game of the playoffs, we shot about 95, 99 three-point shots. We made 3-point shots.
Man.
That was in 1985.
Right.
In 2015, the Golden State Warriors, between the first game of the season and the last game of the playoffs, the Golden State Warriors made 1,072 three-point shots.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
You gotta believe it.
It's really, a lot of people don't really understand what it is to make that shot. That's a tough shot by the end of the day. You know what I mean? But you know what, though? You hit the foul shots, though, right? You know, I mean, today I there's a lot of issues about this whole rule about, you know, fouling, you know, bad foul shooters. And, you know, of course, the Clippers got that issue. A couple other teams got that issue. What do you think about that rule where people are, you know, just fouling folks close to the end of the game like that?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different tactics, and you got to be able to adjust to different tactics. And if you're not fundamentally sound, you know, free throw shooting is one of the fundamental parts of the game.
Right.
If you're no good at that, and the other team can make you pay for your lack of skill, it's up to them to do that. I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Right, right.
It's competition.
There you go. So we're going to have you here on May 5th at Southern Connecticut University Lyman Center. And, you know, what issues are you going to be covering? Can you give us a little hint?
Well, I'm just going to talk about some of the things you just mentioned. The books that I'm writing, I have a series of books about Sherlock Holmes' other brother.
Wow.
And Mycroft Holmes is the name of that book, and it's a series. And I also, you know, I have some TV projects that I'm working on. Hopefully that will show a different dimension of what I'm interested in and how I pursue different entertainment projects.
Right. That's great. Well, listen, brother, I want to thank you for calling in, man. You are a hero to our community. You inspire us. You know, we've been following you your whole career. Not too many NBA players are able to, you know, transcend their careers into what you've done. I love your books, man. Please keep writing. You know, I'm going to continue to read them. And I'm definitely coming to the Lyman Center and hope to meet you, you know. So, brother, thank you again, man. We are so, so happy that you called in.
No problem. Nice talking to you. I'll be looking for you.
My brother, Juan Castillo with you. It's the Rhythm of the City, 94.3 YBC.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.